What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore, and we're back with our Experts Corner interviews. Every Friday, we get the opportunity to listen and have conversations with short-term rental investors that are diving into this game at different stages of the game, willing to share the good, the bad, the ugly. And today we've got Angie and Andy Palmer joining us. And so, guys, I appreciate you jumping on. I told everybody right before, I'm really, really proud of you for jumping on, because you just we were watching Wisconsin not have the best first game in the tournament, and you guys are Madison, Wisconsin, and Badger fans, right?
We're Wisconsin alum. That's where we met in college. So we've been to Madison a while, and always a tough time of year when that one happens.
I'm not trying to rub it in. I just thought, I'm proud of you for showing up and being able to. I'm not a High Point fan by any stretch, so we can still be friends.
It's good to address. It's good to address, though. So yeah,
we're nice, good. Nice, awesome. Well, appreciate you joining me. Why don't we start with a little background? I mean, we told everybody you're from Madison, but tell us a little bit about the backstory about where you guys are from, what pays the bills, what got you interested in short-term rental investing in the first place, and then we'll dive into that journey.
So I have a background that is not related whatsoever. I have an education background. So I work in an elementary school now. I've worked in a high school, and that's kind of where I'm at every day. And then you launched a business this year, so I'll let you talk about that.
I've been in healthcare IT consulting for quite a while now, almost 20 years. I launched my own company in late 2024, which kind of plays into some of our future conversation here in a moment. But I own my own consulting company. I've been doing that for about a year and a half now, and working on electronic health record implementations and things like that with hospitals across the country.
Awesome. How about the real estate background? Any other real estate investing before you got interested in short-term rentals?
Nope, not
a bit. We had briefly talked about it over the years here and there, but neither one of us really had much desire to be a landlord or anything like that, and so we never really had that on the front burner. But then last year we started to have some more in-depth conversations around using short-term rentals as a vehicle for some of those investments and things like that. But then it's just something we like. We travel a lot and have experienced a lot from the consumer side. We kind of just started to, as we kind of listened to a lot of the, information that's out there, and obviously the Vodacy pieces as well, started to, say, hey, we can do this, and that kind of launched our journey.
Love it. And it's funny how often the introduction to short-term rentals, especially post-COVID, has been from the consumer aspect. We're saying, hey, we like traveling this way. We start thinking we like real estate, but we weren't really attracted to the landlord side of life. And it sounds like you guys ran down that same path of saying this might be a little funner.
Yep,
for sure.
Awesome. So that leads into, if it's supposed to be a little bit fun, which I love, the personal use side of it, the lifestyle aspect side of it. So is that how we decided to venture into the first location we went in? How did you go about choosing that first location, and where was it?
Yeah. So our first location is Panama City Beach. And we started off just kind of looking everywhere. We had, we could talk ourselves, one minute we were looking in the mountains, then one minute we were on the coast, and then Wisconsin in a cabin. And we literally were all over the map. But through where he was with his job, he was staying in some short-term rentals in Laurel, Mississippi, and the owner of those is launching a management company. And so they're managing ours. And so we kind of partnered up with them, and Panama City Beach was a market he was familiar with. And so that's how we ended up looking there.
Yeah, we started to kind of firm up our locations. We'd actually started looking a little bit more on the Mississippi Gulf Coast, since that's kind of where, just proximity wise, it was closer to where he lives. But then we started to kind of move east a little bit as we started to kind of look into it a little bit more. We weren't 100% sure where we wanted to go. And then as we kind of looked around the area, as we started to, we never really considered Florida as a top spot. But then we started looking a little bit more into the whole 38 corridor and everything. And the first places we actually looked at were in Sandestin. And then we kind of moved, you know, down the coastline a little bit and then found the property we ended up going with in PCP there. So
is it, it's not an area that you guys, that was like your favorite vacation spot or that you guys went to on a regular basis. It was more, that's really interesting. I love hearing that. Like, so it was more introduced to you through the management partner that you ended up partnering with.
Yeah.
First time we went to Panama City Beach, we bought a place. So yeah, that was our first time there. So,
but it was helpful. We went there and we looked at a bunch of different places kind of along that coast. And so it was, helpful to see, you know, who was kind of coming in, who Panama City Beach right now is targeting, that they're targeting more families, and just to see all the new builds in that area. It, you know, helped us feel more comfortable with this as a long-term investment because it's just really getting built up there. So it was nice to see it in person. And then I think the other thing is we just really liked the house that we bought. Like, of the places we looked at, that was the one I would have wanted to stay in. So that kind of helped steer our choice there. Yeah.
So it's funny. You said the first time you went there, you bought a house. First time I ever went to Destin, I bought a place. And so it was like, I'd never been there. We went there, bought a place there. And so it was, and you mentioned kind of the, like, Panama City Beach was always the, you know, for a long time, the party capital of the Gulf, you know, the panhandle there, and everybody, you know, you had Destin and 30A and all these other places. And over the last 5 to 8 years or so, they've been really trying to rebrand and be more of not the spring break party type place, right? 100%. And so they really started cracking down on that. So you're really seeing it become just very much an extension of really that entire panhandle area in the Gulf that is just a really good vacation spot, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, that was one of the things that I think probably was one of the reasons why Panama City Beach wasn't really high on our list right away, is because of that was our assumption as well. We don't want to have a bunch of, you know, people, punching holes in the wall and partying and all that other stuff at our place and everything. That's not the type of place that we wanted to go with, particularly, for our first one. But then as we were down there, kind of learned more about, semi-recent history of the area and everything, we started to like it more and more. And so, as Angie said, the place we ended up getting, being in an area that, is not in that area where it used to be real crazy and everything, but ended up checking a lot of boxes for us. So we were excited about it.
Nice. So what about the process of running numbers, the data behind it? I mean, obviously you go down, you like the area, we're talking about, hey, listen, I ask this because we naturally select good properties in good areas because of where we want to stay. Angie, you were saying, this is somewhere that I would want to stay. This is somewhere I would enjoy. And so we kind of naturally have this instinctive ability to choose good properties in good areas. But many times we don't instinctively have any clue what kind of revenue potential they actually have versus the purchase price and everything else. So walk me through if and when that part of the conversation came in to making some of these selections.
Yeah, so we had actually modeled out a different purchase in Panama City before we actually went down there, and it modeled out to an okay, type of return. And so, but the property we'd initially looked at didn't have a pool in the backyard, and just a lot of the things that we would have to add in to compete, to be at the upper tier of the properties in the area. We ended up not going forward on that one. We had an offer on in another a duplex that we ended up backing out on in Florida. You have 15 days to be able to basically walk away at that point. So we basically had kind of a hold on another one, decided against that one, and then when we went down there, we started looking at the other the property we ended up getting along with some other ones. But as we kind of looked at some of the potential competition in the area, there weren't a lot of properties that fit that profile. So, we weren't really competing in a large pool of, like homes and things like that. And so that was really appealing to us. And when we kind of modeled it out, we kind of set a target revenue number to make it worthwhile. And kind of, as we kind of, did some of the math and everything, we're like, oh yeah, we think we can hit this. So, So yeah, it was kind of a journey to kind of go through all of that. The place we ended up buying, probably didn't have as much rigor, but we had done rigor in other areas as well. And kind of modeled it out. So we had kind of a good feel for what it was going to look like, when we did end up, making the purchase.
Love it. So when you decide to make that offer, tell me a little bit about some of the, you said like kind of the advantages of not being, you know, the same as everything else. It had some uniqueness to it. What were some of those things that when you're mentioning that you were looking for? We always talk about, right? It's the, as a marketer, we want to be marketing and be an offering and be a, like kind of competing in a category of one. As much as we can differentiate from the competition, we try to do. Sometimes we build that in with design, experience. Sometimes that's built in with the property. It sounds like this one had a few of those things maybe built in to the area and the property. So what were some of those?
Yeah, I think just the amount of bedrooms and sleeping space. It has two primary suites, one on the first floor and one upstairs, and then additional bedrooms on both levels. So just the size alone and how many we could sleep in there. And then we added more king beds than what they originally had. So that was one thing that kind of set it apart, the private pool. And then it was a newer build. I think it was 3 years old when we bought it. Yeah, so when we were looking at some of the other places and what we would need to do to them to take them to a level where we would be excited to walk in there. These had brand new, beautiful bathrooms and, you know, so any additions that we made were just design and not, we didn't have to rehab anything. So that appealed to us as well.
Yeah. And we've got, two kids who are teenagers now. But you know, one of the lenses that we really looked at was, you know, would it be a good property for you kids their ages? And also, would it be a good property when our kids were younger? So like we've traveled with our kids their whole lives. And so, you know, in our experience of looking at properties of, you know, looking at, you know, how much, you know, seating space that you have in common areas, you know, well, you know, if you're going to have a house that can fit 15, 16 people, can the couch sit more than four people, right? You know, so like that type of stuff. And so as we kind of looked at, you know, the different areas and where people can, you know, just be and exist in the property, that was one of the things that we wanted to, you know, really focus on. So, you know, good living space, the backyard has a lot of room and we saw some opportunity there. And one of the things that we wanted to do too, to differentiate ourselves, is build out a nice game room and have, you know, some fun space there, again, for older kids to be able to go and hang out and not just have to, you know, sit and scroll on their phones in the living room for hours at a time. Right. So it really helped us to kind of put things in perspective when we looked at it from that lens. And, you know, this property ended up checking a lot of those boxes for us.
Was it set up as an existing STR already, or was it like, tell me how you bought it, furnished wise, how it was set up and how many changes you had to make?
It was set up as an STR, so we bought it furnished. I would say the furniture, it was pretty minimal, and we replaced almost all of it. So it, you know, but they had, there was some stuff there that we were able to use or move around, but most of the big items we did not replace.
Yeah, all the appliances were new, so we didn't have to replace anything there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think we replaced all the beds, the main couch, and outdoor furniture and stuff like that. We ended up doing a PPA through Mike and the Revo team and everything, and so that was a big part of our purchase as well. And one of the big reasons why we wanted to get it done in 2025 as well. So having something that was furnished that, you know, we could get on the market right away, you know, was in a rentable spot, you know, even though it wasn't where we wanted it to be, we could at least get it launched right away was a big part of what we wanted to do too. We didn't want to buy anything unfurnished and then have to, you know, spend 2 months, you know, figuring all that other stuff out, getting it furnished and delivered and everything as well.
So that was part of the buying process, as we were looking for those furnished properties that we could get on the market sooner rather than later.
Yeah. We needed to have a few rentals for the end of the year.
So let's talk to me through a PPA for those people who don't understand what that is, but it's obviously massive tax advantages for short-term rental investors, right? And it stands for purchase price allocation, but it's a little different than like just the regular bonus depreciation, cost segregation, like where we talk about that a lot, the short-term rental loophole. The PPA is even more aggressive and can save even more massively on taxes, right? Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yeah. And that was a big piece for us. And was important for us as well too. in that purchase. Because 2025, the business that I'd launched had done well. And so there were, a lot of driving forces behind, having some of those tax advantages that you mentioned. I like to kind of describe it as a cost seg on steroids. Same principles. I think the key piece that we kind of learned along the way is that you need to have the PPA language as part of your offer. And there was some maneuvering that we had to do in terms of the language and how we positioned it, and then when things kind of get into underwriting for the loan, like how that's positioned and how you set up that agreement. But we ended up going through Rebo and Mike, and who I know is a Odyssey partner, and they helped guide us through that. They helped craft the language and things like that. So when we made our offer, that was included as part of it, to say, hey, the seller agrees to, a negotiated and agreed upon purchase price allocation. And then that's basically, naming the value of everything in the purchase. So instead of just saying, hey, I'm buying this property, it's saying I'm buying, these components that are worth this much. And so as a result, you're able to then kind of count those in a more advantageous bucket from that perspective. Same concept as a cost segregation, but you're kind of defining that from that standpoint.
Yeah. And you need the cooperation of the seller, right? There's 100%. Like, to your point, it's definitely like a cost seg on steroids, but there's moving parts to it. You both have to be on the same page, both sides. You have to have the right language. And sometimes the language that the CPAs want to have and the IRS wants to have, the lenders don't want to see. And so you're navigating a lot of different things, but the advantages can be massive. And so it's as much of a headache as it is, it can be a massive discount on basically buying that property, right?
Yeah, pretty much. And so we ended up not getting as high of an allocation as we had hoped for, but still well within the range of it being way more beneficial for us. And so we had to balance kind of timing as well. So this was, I think, late November. So we were in crunch time for being able to close before the end of the year and launch it and everything. And so. So even though we didn't get as high as where we wanted to, and this was because the seller had some other things that were going on that, he didn't want to go that high on some of the allocations, which is fine. And so we reached the agreement, and, it still ended up being, a very good way, for us to purchase the price.
More beneficial than just the regular cost seg and bonus depreciation.
Yeah, so I would say probably by about 2.5 times more, in terms of, actual benefit.
Yep. And that's been my experience when I've yet to do a PPA personally. I've done the cost seg and the bonus depreciation and got audited on it. So I know it works, but with zero changes. So we know that we know it'll hold up, but I have not done that. But it is very attractive when I see the numbers. Sometimes it's 2-3 times as much of a tax write off and the savings than you'll have just doing a regular short term rental loophole. So that's awesome. Yep. Good to hear. I didn't realize you guys did that on that property. So that's awesome. And so we got it launched. And then did you go back and have to do, Angie, you mentioned that you guys ended up now going and kind of replacing a lot of the furniture. It was maybe, not exactly what you wanted in there. So walk me through what that looked like after we got it launched and we got all of our qualifications done. Is that when we decided at the start of 2026 to say, hey, listen, we're going to go kind of get this set up and get ready for the 2026 season?
Exactly. Yep. So we January
time. Well, we launched in December 2025. Yeah. And so the gentleman that we're working with had already at a private booking site and kind of had a network, and we were able to kind of market to a small group. And so we were able to get a couple rentals on the books in 2025. And so we wanted to make sure that we had some actual rentals for 2025. Yes. With serviceable, setup, right? I mean, the beds and furniture were fine, but they weren't kind of like going to separate us out from the rest of the market and things like that. And so, so there's nothing bad about it. It just wasn't really kind of like, upper tier where we were going for. And so we were able to do that. We had a couple sporadic ones, I think in January for a couple of days. So we kept it on the market from a private booking perspective. And then as we were going through, the changes that we were talking about, then I think we finally launched an Airbnb, early February?
So the design process was, probably the most fun I had with it. we worked with that same, our manager and his wife has a design background. And so we kind of used her and her expertise. But we had a vision of what we wanted it to feel like. We just from our own experiences, I like places that feel like the location that they're in. But I also still want to feel relaxed and calm when I'm on vacation, right? I want it to feel peaceful and luxurious, but still fun. And so that's kind of where we started and just looked at different colors and, you know, I've watched all the design videos on Bodicy and multiple times. So we just kind of picked, you know, some wallpaper that was going to be in the living room and some focal walls, and it kind of all trickled from there.
And you sounds like you were pretty involved in that then, Angie, right? You and the property manager's wife doing that kind of together with her background, with your guys' vision, having fun with that. It's awesome. It's awesome when you're like, hey, listen, this is like a fun part of the process. See, for me, that's like the not fun part of the process. I'm just like, let's just get it done so I can start making money. I don't want to deal with that part. But that's and those of you listening, you guys know we always post the links to these properties, so you know what we're talking about, what they turned out to be. And you mentioned something, Angie, where you said, you know, we kind of wanted to you like when you go to these properties and it kind of represents the area, represents the you know, the things that you're going to be doing there. And I think you guys did a great job with that. And we always say that too. We want to bring the area to life. We want to bring the kind of the star of the show in that area to life in those properties in some degree. And I think that you guys did a great job with that. So you had some fun with that. You got that done, and then got the photography done and launched it February. And kind of getting ready for spring break season. We're right in the middle of spring break season right now. And so it's, I've seen pictures of beaches down there. They're pretty dang crowded. So it's, I've seen some numbers down there. So tell me a little bit about the launch. How did it go? And we'll talk about, I know you launched in December and how that went. Let's talk about kind of the launch as you set it up the way that you really want to maximize it.
Yeah. The Airbnb launch, I think it happened almost sooner than we thought. Like, we had the listing and we had, we thought we had another week or so for, you know, to go back in and hit out the punch list items. Like, we still have the backyard pictures to update and it just started renting and it hasn't stopped. And so we just are kind of rolling with it. And we have a great, cleaner, and her husband does our, like, he's kind of a repair person. And so we've been really leaning on them, and they've been helping us do some of that in between guests. But it launched faster than we thought it would. The minute that listing went up, it was booking, which is a great problem to have.
That's awesome. That's a good problem. Yeah,
it is.
Yeah, for sure. And I think we just crossed into the top 10% in the area, which is great, you know, and to be able to do that in such short order has been awesome. But yeah, like Angie said, I mean, there's still some things we want to finish up, and, you know, like, we don't feel that we're fully done yet, but, you know, we're 98% of the way there. But, it definitely, you know, felt like a whirlwind at times, but, you know, an exciting one, you know, where, you know, it's been fun to get excited about it. You ended up going down there, as well, you know, after a lot of those were in. I actually haven't seen the updates in person. You know, I think listening to you talk about it has been exciting as well. Just, you know, how much, you know, it can even stand out more than the pictures itself. So it's been exciting that way.
Yeah. And that's, it's, you know, we started off on how you chose the area, it's not an area that you guys have, you know, frequented on vacation a lot. I think that might change a little bit, because I know a lot of people from Wisconsin, they like those beaches in Florida, especially in those cold winter months. Right.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I think we, when we started out, we were not thinking we would be using it that much. And then as we watched it getting developed, and then when I went to it, when it was done, I'm like, we'll be here once a year, I think.
Yeah, at least.
That's awesome. Great.
So tell me, you talked about your funnest part of the process, Angie, was kind of that design and getting that all put together and seeing it come to life. What was the hardest part, or some of the big challenges, as you went through that process? Cause it's not always the easiest road getting through acquisition to launch.
Yeah, I think initially just that first decision of, like, you're looking at the sticker price and, just the fear of, like, making the first call that we're going to do this and this is what we're buying. That was a big step. exciting, but scary.
Yeah. Particularly when you kind of come to the realization of like, yeah, we're going to end up replacing more than we initially thought. You know, we just wrote a big check for the house and now we're going to write more big checks for all the other things. And then, you know, some of those things. So I think that was one of the ones too, where it was like, oh, okay, well, you know, but we looked at it as like, hey, this is an important investment to get it off on the right foot. And, you know, you only get, you know, one opportunity to come out of the gates hot. And so, you know, we wanted to make sure we did that. And so, you know, we decided to make that investment to say, hey, we want to do this right, you know, right out of the gate. And not, you know, kind of piecemeal it together too much, because, you know, then, you know, there's a lot of reasons to delay things or not do things. And then, you know, 3 years later, we might still be, you know, talking about replacing the water heater, you know, and then, you know, yeah, fielding complaints on hot water running out, right? So like, those are the types of things where we kind of said, all right, hey, well, like, let's make the investment now. Let's get it in and get it launched the right way.
Love that. And I love that you brought up, Angie, one of the hardest parts is actually making the decision we're doing this, right? Like, this is real. Yeah. Like, we're actually signing the offer. We're actually going to do this. We don't talk about that nearly as often as I know how much that is probably the hardest and scariest part, especially on somebody's first investment property, is actually saying we're doing this, or like, we're looking at each other like, holy crap, are we like, we're doing this, or is this like, it's like we're 90% scared to death, 10% excited, and we don't know which one's which sometimes, and we're like, you know.
I think there were more than one occasion where we just kind of look across the room at each other and be like, are you sure? You know, and
hoping the other person talks you out of it, right? It's like, you don't want to be the one that's like
I don't want to be the one pushing it if you're not doing it. But no, it was we definitely had you know, that back and forth for sure. But you know, I think when we, you know, once we kind of made the leap and said, all right, hey, this is a real thing, and you know, the offer was accepted, and we did all the things, and we're like, all right, hey, we're in it. So like I said, let's do it right.
Yeah. And I love that too. One of the drawbacks of short-term rentals is they are capital intensive. I mean, it's to really get them set up correctly and get them, you know, like you said, you only get one chance to make a first impression. You really only get one chance to launch that property the right way and get that momentum, and, you know, and then really start off on the right foot. Like you mentioned, you're rising to the top 10% of the market right now. And I mean, that's phenomenal in a short period of time, but that's because of the decisions you made. Some of those decisions are spending money, right? And getting it set up. And that still can be a really scary part of the process. And it's hard to continue to do when the money is not coming in. You have to look at it and say, you know, I have to make database back decisions where I'm looking at this stuff with a very reasonable chance of being able to get a return on that investment, right? So we are looking at that, but it's still, there's always risk, and it's always still feels like that leap of faith. And so talk to me a little bit about how it feels when those first, you know, those first bookings start coming in, and those first reviews start coming in, and people are saying how great the property is. And tell me, how, like, that relief a little bit, like there's just a little sigh of relief, like, okay, this is actually going to work.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the first time we had guests there before we redid it, and then after we redid it again, it's just, it was like kind of a terrifying, like, oh my gosh, this is happening. We're in it. They're here. The first time we got a notification that like someone couldn't find something or there was any little issue. And, you know, I'm like, is our manager on it? Should we do it? Yeah. Like, who's someone couldn't find the wine opener that was right in the drawer. And I was, you know, up all night dreaming about wine openers and that like, this was going to tank us. He found it. It was fine. And then when you get the 5-star review and just hearing people, talk about how much they enjoyed the house, especially if they're talking about time with their family or, you know,
right,
just having the same kind of memories that we value so much that we had with our kids, that to me is when, along with all the financial components, that this becomes really worth all the stress and the time and the, you know, all the work.
I think too, kind of tying it back to, you know, what we were just talking about too, with like kind of investing in some of those things. One of the things that, you know, we debated on, but, you know, felt would differentiate us is, you know, putting a hot tub in the backyard, right? So most people aren't going to think, Florida, I need a hot tub. We decided to go forward with it. Now, even the realtor we used, it was kind of, you know, ho-hum on the idea of it, you know, and kind of said, hey, like, he doesn't see it as a driver. However, like, you know, obviously, you know, we're very new into the process here, but, you know, a lot of the commentary that we've gotten from our early guests are like, hey, we've enjoyed the hot tub. It's nice to be able to do that. And so, you know, it's probably already paid for itself in terms of a couple extra bookings in shoulder season and things like that. And we expect it to be able to do the same thing, you know, after the summer months and, you know, just being able to invest in something that, you know, kind of, you know, makes us a little bit different or maybe adds that one more thing that people can do when they're at the place. I think was something that, you know, I'm really happy we you know, kind of pushed ourselves to make those decisions and pull the trigger on them.
Yeah, I love it. I love you brought up the hot tub down in the beach markets. I'm always shocked at how often realtors, management partners discourage hot tubs down in those markets. And we see a massive advantage to having those during, especially during the shoulder seasons. And, you know, that people still go like to go to the beach, but they want to sit in something warm. It's still cold enough. You're not swimming. You're not going on the beach and swimming and stuff during those shoulder seasons in the wintertime. But when somebody can go down there and still enjoy the hot tub and stuff, we hear and same thing. We hear, you know, all the time how those properties down there, the, how much the guests enjoy and look for those hot tubs, especially during those times of years. And I think that is a great move. And so it's funny too, when we talk about these launches, and you guys, you know, you're kind of lighting up, Angie, when you're hearing about the reviews and seeing what people say. It's like, I swear we're all the same. I have yet to find anybody that's like, you know, I was so much happier when I saw that money hit my bank account than waiting for that 5-star review and seeing what somebody said about our property. Like, we look for that way more. Like, we anticipate that more than the money hitting our bank account, I swear, every time.
Yeah.
Oh, I think it's at least 10 or 20 to one of like commentary and review, looking at those versus like the actual revenue coming in right now. So it's pretty funny for sure.
Especially in the beginning. It's, you know, reading those reviews in the beginning. And if you have an issue or they can't find something, you're like, what do you mean you can't find the wine opener? It's right there. You're like, we get those too. And you're just like, I feel like Teresa and I will, you know, we don't manage our own properties, but we see them sometimes and we're like, oh, it's so funny that, you know, like Teresa's always just like, I'm just going to like call him up and tell him like how to fix this. And I'm like, you don't manage it. Let the manager handle it.
Sounds like a familiar conversation we just had.
I'm having to do the same of like, I'm always like, I can call him. I'm seeing this. I can handle it. And then
just let him do it. Right. And then, it's, but it is fun. It is. You know, and I think we like those reviews, especially because we do put so much time and effort and money and care into these properties that we care if somebody likes it and has a good time. And that's what makes a good host as well. And I think that it's always fun to have these conversations and be able to hear that, because it's so important and it's so fun when you know, all that hard work kind of gets validated by somebody saying, man, this is really nice. You know, thanks for putting this together for us in their own way. And just like you said, just waiting for that feedback and that review to come in I don't know how to put a price tag on that. It gives that, like, during, right after that real stressful time when all the money's going out, like, I know that, you know, ultimately this is an investment, and over time it starts to, you know, be a very positive investment. But in the very beginning, sometimes we care a lot more about what people say about it than that money that's hitting the bank. It seems like in the first part of it. So as we go through, tell me about, we launched this property. Do we have plans for a second property? Do we have, what are the future plans for this one and moving forward on other properties?
Yeah, I think we are starting conversations about property number two. One of the things, if we could go back to the first one and do differently, I for sure would have started the process sooner just because of the crunch at the end of the year.
And yes.
Going into spring break, having more time, but for that. So I think we're just much more aware this time around, especially, you know, depending on where we look, when we want to make that purchase so that we have time to breathe a little bit before we launch it.
It's so, like, people don't realize how stressful it is when you start really making the decision that second half of the year and getting into the fourth quarter of the year of trying to put it all together, especially when you're trying to do all the tax stuff and get these things launched and get them going. It's like, man, you really put your back against the wall sometimes. And so, yeah, where you guys felt that really getting a property in November and saying, okay, you really felt it, right? Your back was really against the wall, and then really planning out this next one, giving yourself just a little more breathing room.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, 100%. And, you know, I think, you know, that's a big lesson learned for us. You know, it takes a good 2 to 3 months to really get it to, you know, where you're going to want it to be. You know, we were lucky in that, you know, we were able to, you know, be able to rent it right away. We had a mechanism to be able to do it right away. You know, so it met our goals from a timing perspective, but had we not had one of those things, we wouldn't have been able to do that. And so that would have been, you know, a lot of effort that, you know, had been wasted and everything. And so, So yeah, I think, you know, definitely some good lessons learned there and in terms of how we'd want to do it. You know, in terms of our broader, you know, future plans, I think, you know, we'd like to try to, you know, bring on board at least one, if not two properties a year, you know, for the foreseeable future. You know, I think, you know, we're open to a lot of different markets. And so I think, you know, as Andy kind of mentioned too, and you mentioned earlier that, you know, we're looking a little more closer to home now and in kind of the Wisconsin and Michigan area on the Lake Michigan side. You know, taking a lot of those lessons learned of like, all right, hey, how do you differentiate? How do you really kind of, you know, take a property up to that level? I think is something that, you know, we're, you know, keeping a really close eye on and, you know, factoring all those things in now. Mm-hmm.
Love it. Love it. Awesome. Well, listen, this has been a fun conversation. What I always like to do and end on is, and I'll ask you both to answer the question, is if you had to go back and give yourself some advice, your younger self, some advice, some things you wish you knew, maybe some, you know, some words of encouragement, maybe some things to avoid. Is there anything that comes to mind of what you'd like to tell your younger self or your current self going into property number two?
I think start sooner for sure, like years sooner, months sooner, all of it. And I think, to not stress about picking the perfect location, but just pick the location that works with what you're looking at in that moment. And it's not the last one or the, you know, just pick one that makes sense given what you have on the table.
Yeah. And I would say, don't let perfection be the enemy of good because, you know, you can take good and you can elevate it to great. Right. So, so I think that was one thing that, you know, we're, you know, pretty detail oriented when it comes to a lot of these things. And when you get into that, you can kind of get into that, you know, analysis paralysis and find reasons not to do something. You know, but when, you know, 9 out of 10 reasons are pointing you towards doing it, don't dwell on the one, you know, and really kind of, you know, be ready to act. Right. So I think that was something for us that, you know, we pushed ourselves to be able to do and kind of get out of our comfort zone a little bit and say, all right, hey, yep, we're going to do it. Let's do it. And then, you know, again, don't let you, we didn't let your perfection be the enemy of good on that one.
I love it. And you know, the number one piece of advice we always hear somebody say is start sooner. Like don't wait on stuff. You know, we always wish we would have started yesterday. The next best time is right now. Right. And I love the advice of, listen, there's never a perfect property. There's never a perfect market. And sometimes we want that, especially on our first property. Right. And we realize that, hey, everything doesn't have to be perfect. Right. We're going to line up as good as we can to mitigate the risk and set these things up for success and maximize the assets. And we know we're going to keep doing it again. And it's, you know, a lot of times we're taking, you know, B properties and turning them into A properties. And instead of finding that A property a lot of times. And so it's great advice just to say, you know, because high performers, they have a tendency to try to be, everything needs to be perfect, right? It's like, okay, well, I don't want this to mess up, so I'm going to wait for perfection. And when you wait for perfection, you just end up, nothing happens, right? It's just a very, very difficult, a difficult bar to set for yourself to try to achieve. And ultimately what happens is you don't do anything. And so I think it's a great piece of advice because that leads into, hey, it gives yourself permission to take action. It gives yourself permission to move forward without having every single thing perfect. Right.
Yep.
So awesome, guys. Well, listen, this has been a really fun conversation. I love that you were willing to let other people kind of listen in on it and sit in on our conversation of getting caught up and everything and sharing your advice, your journey along the way. I'm super excited for you guys, especially, you know, going right now into that spring break season, which is going to roll right into your nice summer season and really watch you guys maximize this asset. And let's get one on the books and under contract before November this year. And
it's a great goal.
Maybe Halloween.
Let's have Halloween as be like our December mark, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Awesome, guys. Well, listen, I appreciate you joining us. Those of you listening, we appreciate you spending your time with us as well. We know how valuable it is. and we very much appreciate it. I know you guys like these episodes as much as I do because of all the feedback we get. But one of the things that we are noticing is that 56% of our listeners, those of you that are regular listeners, do not subscribe to our channel. And so we always ask you the favor at the end of the shows is to subscribe to the channel. Those things are really helpful. You know that you don't have to listen to a bunch of ads or sponsorships when you listen to these episodes because I don't run them. So the only way the show grows is if you guys share it and or you like and subscribe so that the platforms will share them. Their algorithms will share them with other people just like you. So those things are very, very appreciated. And the final, most important thing I ask you at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today, start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey, Grace, is there a website?
Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.